Well, g'day legends. Welcome back to another episode for the Laptop Lifestyle Dad Show, proudly brought to you in partnership with the Los Angeles Tribune. Hey, I'm your host, Jeff Ross, a proud dad of three amazing boys, coming to you from the beautiful island of Tasmania, Australia. As we wrap up 2024 and we prepare to leap into exciting new year, we've got the perfect guest to inspire you and equip you for what's ahead. Rex Sykes is joining us for an incredible journey today. He's going to share his insights about how to create life on your terms. Rex is a trailblazer in the personal development, in helping people to master NLP, and he's also a transformational coach who has helped thousands achieve clarity, purpose, and success. Whether you're looking to align your mindset, hone your storytelling skills, or building meaningful connections, has wisdom that will set you up for success in 2025 and beyond. So go grab that cuppa. Let's tune in, legends, and let's get ready for an empowering and action-packed conversation with the one and only Rex Sykes. So Rex, thank you very much for saying yes to becoming a guest on the Laptop Lifestyle Dad Show.
Jeff, thank you so much for having me. I'm humbled and honored to be on your show. Thank you.
I really appreciate you, and I'm really looking forward to getting to know you personally and for our audience to connect with you as well. So Rex, as we head into the new year, you know, this is normally a time where most people sort of sit back and reflect on what they want to change in their lives. What advice would you give to someone who's looking to realign with their purpose and start fresh in 2025?
Gosh, what a beautiful question. I'm going to answer it in a couple different ways, if you don't mind.
Please do.
The first is that, you know, mindset and attitude is everything. It means the most when it comes to our health, our happiness, our wealth, and the relationships that we have. Because if your attitude isn't right, if your mindset isn't right, if you that number one domino isn't placed in the right place, then everything else won't happen the way you ought to. You know, it's science tells us this. Attitude is the number one predictor for success in every area of your life. I mean, think about that. Attitude determines how successful you'll be in every area of your life. Because if your attitude sucks, then everything else sucks. I mean, essentially, right? And the issue that most people have is that they want to figure out how to do something without knowing how to do it. So they make all of the importance on how to do it, or what to do, or what steps to take, or whether they should do it or should not do it, instead of going, you know what I first need to do? I need to get my head on straight. I need to think really. The right thought to think is, if it's possible for anyone, it's possible for me. If I don't know how to do it, I can learn to do it. And if I can't learn to do it, I can find somebody who can either help me learn to do it or help me do it, or somebody I can, you know, purchase it from, or, you know, engage in some way. But you have to be able to go from what's impossible or unwanted, or what you don't like, to what you could like, could do, and then decide to make that happen. So it goes from I can't do it to I can do it, or I could do it, to, well, if I could do it, then maybe I will do it. And if I will do it, then if I do it, then I could get some results. And you have to understand, and I just finished a blog for tomorrow. I've been writing a blog for like 15 years every day. Haven't ever broken the chain. Every consecutive days, over 5,000 blog. That's my dog. And I do that because if I'm traveling, Bailey, come here. I do that because if I'm traveling, and I'm in a place where there's no internet, I have to write, you know, a number of them in advance so that it drips out automatically. I do it because the people that I'm writing for are important to me, and I don't want to disappoint them. So I made a commitment to do daily inspiration and gratitude so many years ago. And so every day I write at least one blog, even if I can't deliver it. But the point being is the Wright brothers, for example, wanted to do something that had never been done before. They wanted to create a heavier than air flying machine. And they didn't know how to do it. They were bike manufacturers, you know, bike salespeople. But they decided they would undertake this task. And so they started to experiment. They tried and they tried and they tried. Their family said, you know, you're an idiot. Give it up. Everybody hates you. They think you're stupid. This is a lost cause. We're never going to fly. If God meant for us to fly, we'd have wings, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Kept at it in spite of it. And what they were doing, which I think is really important, is to understand that they were experimenting. Do an experiment, you don't know how it's going to work out. But you do know this, that whatever, however it works out, you get some feedback for what you did.
Yeah.
It's that you ever make a, you never have a failure, and you can never make a bad decision.
Yeah.
And people have
to get it. Feedback, right? It's just all research.
Right. And it's, and you only make a decision and you may not get the result that you wanted or what you intended to hope, you know, happen, but you get something back. So it's not a bad decision. It's a decision that you didn't want, obviously, but you got it. So now what do you do with it? Instead of blaming, which a lot of people do, they got made a bad decision, they regret, they do go through all sorts of issues. What they need to do is go, I've gotten important feedback to move forward. So it's always about adjusting and continuing. And so what the Wright brothers did is they would get feedback, they would adjust, they would try again. It didn't work out, they would adjust, they would try again. They kept doing this until they flew. And here's the important point. They didn't know how to fly until after they flew.
Yeah. So Roger Bannister, the 4-minute mile, right? You know, another example. Or Thomas Edison with the light bulb, you know, another example.
Well, 10,000 trials on the light bulb, right? And yeah. I learned how to make the light bulb. But the point is, if they didn't have the attitude to be passionate about it, want to do it, and persevere in spite of all the odds, they wouldn't. They would have quit. They'd throw in the towel. And as Napoleon Hill would say, you know, if you throw in the towel, if you quit, well, then you failed, you know, because you gave up. But as long as you're attempting, or as Earl Nightingale would say, you know, success is a steady progression toward a worthwhile goal. Mm-hmm. So as long as you're moving yourself forward in some way, you're getting closer to whatever your outcome might be. And that's that people need to understand.
That's very profound. And I want to go a bit deeper with that because a few light bulb moments are going off for me. And it's like, that's been my journey. That sort of describes that. So I'm sure our listeners are having the same sort of experience here. You know, just to give some context, I tried to kill myself 10 years ago. And, you know, I've got to a point in my life where I was so depressed and I thought that I was the problem. And my thinking led to that final action almost. And it wasn't until I was interrupted with an experience of absolutely immense love that pulled me up out of that space to help me adjust my thinking and take ownership of a few things and take control of my thinking and my thoughts and my life. And out of that whole last 10 years, I've just been a student of learning how to love myself, to love others, to love God, whatever you want to call it, and to be bigger in that space and not be about me, but be about that service. And I can see that that's your heart too, right? It becomes that calling almost that you're not doing it because you want to, you know, the paycheck or anything like that. You're doing it because you have to do it to serve humanity. So there's that space in there. And then the other thing that comes up to me in this conversation is understanding our thoughts and and the way that our thoughts lead to our actions lead to our results, understanding that and having awareness around that, just like you're describing there in the examples of the Wright brothers, we've got to embrace failure. And that was the big thing for me is I had to learn how to fall in love with the concept of failing forward fast. And, you know, the world says that failure is something that's detrimental, that it'll destroy you or disempower you or help you keep you small. But the opposite is where the truth is at. And so I now live my life, you know, looking for ways to push the boundaries, to push the envelope, to essentially fail forward fast so I can pivot and adjust and go help more people. But what I'm really scared of, is regret. So I embrace failure, but I don't want to live a life of regret. And that's a driving force for me to be able to get out of my comfort zone. I'd love to unpack that a bit deeper. What are some of the light bulbs or something that you want to speak into that conversation?
Well, you know, what a beautiful share. Everything that you said was so poignant and so powerful and so positive. And I applaud you for those discoveries and how you also share and how you show up in the world and help other people to understand and embrace those too. I think an important concept needs to be, you know, if you decide that you're going to run a marathon, it doesn't matter if you make the marathon in a day or in 100 days. However, if you quit before crossing the finish line, if you give up, you throw in the towel, you didn't complete the marathon. But if it's 100 days to do a 2-day marathon, you succeeded. You just succeeded a little later than the 2 days that you gave yourself. Mm. So it's we set these rules, or society sets these rules, and then we try to conform to them.
Expectations.
The point is, there was a rule that you couldn't fly in a heavier than air aircraft either, you know. But what we did is, instead of saying gravity will demonstrate that you can't, they learned another principle, which was the principle of lift, that at a certain speed, a rate of acceleration, and with a certain design, that the plane could actually fly. So instead of letting society or universal principles or the laws or whatever tell them that they couldn't do it, they said, we'll find a way, you know.
Yeah.
And they kept flying until they did.
Yeah.
And that's important for people to know. Do you know when most people give up?
When they've tried absolutely everything and they've given, they've talked themselves out, into it, really. No. Before they start. Yeah, that's profound. It's already happened before it starts. Yeah. Wow. They've already talked themselves into it.
Yep. They go, I want to do this. No, I can't do it. I don't have the time. I don't have you don't have the know-how. I don't have the people. I don't have the connections. They have all the reasons why they can't do it. And then if they do start, then all those reasons and everything come up. And then they say stupid things like, oh, I'm sabotaging myself. You're not sabotaging yourself.
Got to justify
it. All you're doing is fulfilling what you learned to do. You're doing the program you learned to do, which was to provide all these reasons and stop. That's not sabotage. That's doing exactly what you learned. This is what people, psychology has come along and given us some of the dumbest principles in the world. You say, well, I want to do it, but I don't. And they go, well, you're holding you back. You don't have counter intentions. You have intentions. Mm-hmm. Then you want to do something, but you're programmed to do it something a different way.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
So it's like my car. If I put my car in cruise control, it can't do anything it wants. It does what it's programmed to do. And if I go, you're not going fast enough, my car is sabotaging me, because, I mean, that's as silly as what we do with ourselves. So my point is this. Forget that I just criticized psychology there, and realize this. It's what we tell ourselves is important. And the stories and the reasons and the discussions that we have with ourselves and the willingness to feel bad about things about ourselves when we ought not to, part of our conditioning. And my message has been for 50 years, you don't have to feel that way. You don't have to do that. There's another way to be, another way to live, and you can live free. It doesn't mean also that, well, you were going to say something and I'll come back.
So I feel like the profound moment here in this whole conversation is what are we attaching ourselves to? You know, this is something that I've been sort of discovering over the last 2 years, right? And I feel like I've sort of hit the nail on the head for myself. And my own journey before was I was attaching to the way that the world wanted me to show up, you know, and how I thought the world wanted to see me. So my expectations of what the world was viewing me through that lens was a bit skewed, right? But I was attached to that. I was conforming to that. I was conditioned to believe those expectations. And now, you know, coming into this last 2 years, this is where I feel like my own journey has just gone from leaps and bounds, and, you know, things feel a little bit easier. Things are happening. Doors are opening. And the profound sort of insight here is my attachment has shifted. My attachment's no longer on me, myself, and I. It's not even on the way that the world sees me. I had to, for me, in a spiritual context, bring in my attachment to the way God sees me. And, you know, in the Bible, you read it, God sees us, it says, as we're wonderfully made, we're created in his image. You know, so I needed to attach to that identity. And that's the big key word there, right, is their identity and where we see ourselves and how we see ourselves and what is our attachment to that identity. And so that shift in that attachment, because I feel like, you know, as humans, we all need to be attached to something. We all need to belong to something. We all need to feel like we're contributing somehow, right? And it was that shift for me is where the real sort of strength and growth and you know, really starting to live in that light and that love and that positive and that abundance. That was the big sort of profound shift for me. Can you sort of unpack that and go a little bit deeper with that?
Again, you've said so many gems. It's beautiful. I would offer this, and that is, it's all about what you said in the beginning. It was about loving and loving yourself and loving God or the universe or whatever you want to call it, and loving others. The more that we allow ourselves to be loved, the more we allow ourselves to love, the more love is something that we promote and spread, the more everything opens up for us.
Yeah.
Love is one of those just very powerful, positive emotions. And the issue is that so many people are so busy setting their boundaries and worrying about what other people will do or how they will respond, or that they're trying to hold me back, or that they're energy vampires. And I go, you know, Jesus didn't walk around going, you know, you're sinners and you're whores and you're drunkards and you're, you know, he accepted and said, you know, do you believe you've been healed? And they said, yes. He goes, good, go. Your faith has made you whole now. Go and sin no more. It was so accepting. And the healing, he didn't walk around going, hey, I healed you.
You got an arrogant.
And the lights on the guy, you know, he had all the marketing machinery to make him a big deal. It was all about the person. It was the relationship he had with the person, even if it was in that second of what he did to allow them to come into their own understanding that it wasn't he did something special. It was who they were. So be, do, have is important. There are people who go, I can't manifest. I'm having trouble. I'm struggling. And there's all these people out there going, are you having trouble manifesting things? And I go, you know, you will until you become the kind of person for whom manifesting is easy. Because if they're going, this is hard, I don't get it, that's not working, you're not the kind of person for whom it's easy. Because if it's easy, it's something you do naturally. If I said, can you walk across the room and get a drink of water? You don't go, I don't. I mean, there may be some people who are challenged physically and not able to do that. But if you can physically do that, does it take confidence? Does it take a superpower to do it? You just go, no, I'll go do it. Mm-hmm. Well, manifest should be that way too, but so should loving. So should our relationships. They should be such a part of us. So, for example, I write about in my book a number of different people. I know maybe six people who have been paralyzed in their life, told they would never walk again or move again. One I write about in the book is Jamie Nieto, an Olympic athlete, made a quadriplegic. The statement is, believe the diagnosis, but not the prognosis. There are people who are told that they won't live another year, another 4 years, another 10 years, and they go on and they live 30, 40 years. And so the point is you have to understand that that's what attitude is about. If you just accept what someone says, you know, and they go, here's your sentence, you're never going to walk again and you're never going to be able to do anything again. And you go, okay, and you accept it. Well, it's likely that you won't. But a friend of mine, Dan Clark, said, I went to 16 doctors. He was paralyzed as a teenager playing football. He said, I went to 16 doctors. Why did I go to 16? Because the first 15 told me I'd never walk. He said, I wanted to find a doctor who could say, yes, it's possible you could walk.
Possible. Yeah. Bring that hope into the conversation.
And you have to. And you have to be hopeful and you have to be optimistic and you have to be positive. And if things don't work out, going back to the original thing, if it doesn't work out like the Wright brothers do, you adjust and you continue. And you adjust and you continue. So the gentleman who has no arms and legs, he's a public speaker. I can never say his name, Verbicek, or however they say it, says this. He says, people come up to me and go, how can you be happy without any arms and legs? And he says, I got a question for you. How can you be unhappy with arms and legs?
Beautiful question.
Yeah. So it's really what you make of it. So what you said about loving is really important. And why do I do what I do? Because it's a relationship. You know, there are plenty of people who speak to stadiums. I've spoken to stadiums, but that's not what thrills or impresses me. I've been on TV in front of millions of people. That doesn't impress me. What impresses me is this kind of conversation that you and I can have right here. Because it's not about convincing. It's not about persuasion. It's not about influence. It's not about right or wrong. It's about connecting with another person.
Yeah. It's what I call a heart-to-heart connection. It's like we're meeting each other. You know, you're on the other side of the world. I'm here in Australia, but our energy is palpable, and you know, we're having that energy transfer. It's a two-way conversation. It's heart to heart.
When I do live events, I limit them in terms of size. I don't want 40,000 people. I don't want 4,000 people. I don't want to speak. I want enough people that I can interact with all of them. I can have dinner with all of them. I can sit down and get to know them. 20 or 30 or 50 people. But the point is that I want to get to know them. I always say that if I'm a live event, people fly in from all around the world to hear me speak and to be in my training or whatever, that I'm the luckiest person in the room because they're all there to see me, but I get to meet all of them. Each single one of them have a skill, a talent, an ability, an insight, wisdom, or some experience that I don't.
That's beautiful.
But I get to connect with them, and they get to enrich me, and I get to enrich them. So my Rex's rule is always this. Go first. Want to be listened to? listen first. If you want to be respected, respect first. If you want to be loved, be loving first. Mm. If you want to make money, be generous first. And so many people are trying to do this and this and grab and grab and grab and grab.
Take, yeah.
And they're trying to do these businesses and they're trying to get their money. It's important. I'm not saying it's not. But if you look at the people who are mega successful, and granted, there's some counterexamples that today's world, people get rich overnight in the stock market or in crypto or something. But if you look at the history of the world, the people who made the deepest impact, the biggest impact, got the most wealth and the most fame for the most part, were people who went to serve the world, not themselves rich.
Yeah.
They were either connecting the railroads or they were building a better steamship.
Yeah.
Or they said
kind of legacy. Yeah.
Air travel and then rocket ships came about. I mean, in other words, it's always been in the service of humans, not in just the service of self.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
And if you look at Jesus, whether you believe he's a deity or no deity, let's say he's not. For a second, say that he's not. His mission still was to reach people where they were at to help them heal and to discover that the kingdom of heaven was within them. It wasn't to be grandiose and get rich Jesus. So,
and it transformed cultures, it's still 2000 years later, but if you look at the Roman culture who crucified Jesus, their culture was so opposite to what he stood for. And then 600 years later, they're adopting everything he stands for. They've actually brought in Catholicism, they've brought in the Pope, and they've actually transformed the culture, and that's what he did in that time. I don't know any person in history who's had that much influence on culture. And so you've got to look at the man itself, and what he did in that space and how he did it. And I find that very fascinating. Shifting gears a little bit here, I want to talk to today's world. And one of the biggest challenges I see in online marketing, the social selling arena, whatever you want to call it, is trust is at an all-time low. It's no wonder it's at an all-time low. People have been scammed left, right, and center with data, crypting, whatever it is, the MLM industry, whatever you want to call it. And 20 years into this, online business space now, I would go far as saying that the day of the celebrity guru type coach to look at me, the ones with the flash cars, the flash planes in the background, I'd say that day's over. So do I. And what I see beautiful happening is the ones who get it right, focusing on community, and they're doing it together. And the coach as well is in a position really is the facilitator, is the guide on the journey, but it's all happening together in community. And I'm finding that that's where the real trust is developed. I'd love for you to share your, decades of wisdom and experience in this space and what insights that you have on this conversation.
Well, again, it goes back to love, and it goes back to accepting yourself and accepting others and loving yourself and loving others and the relationship. Mm-hmm. And what is community but people relating inside a group. Now, I hate the term like-minded people. I get it. It's nice to hang around with like-minded people, but I want people who also challenge me and provoke me. And
diversity.
So I don't just want like-minded people. I want people. And if I can be open and accepting to all people, again, so here's the thing. Do you think that an enlightened person like Buddha, Jesus, Lao Tzu, name anybody, that they were concerned that look at who Jesus hung around with. He didn't go there. I'm surrounded by these energy vampires and these takers and these suckers.
They're not like-minded people.
Well, and they weren't like-minded people. But the point that I'm making is that it didn't bother him. It didn't get him. He didn't go off his message, and it's because the person who is above that can accept anyone, regardless of what they do, what they think, their political, religious views, their practices. It doesn't mean you have to tolerate crime. I'm not saying that, but there is a saying, love the sinner, but don't love the sin, and forgiveness is extended to all. It's not just when Jesus was in front of Pilate, and he said, well, who do you say you are? It's like Jesus remained silent. He didn't sit there and go give you every reason, why Pilate should have, given him.
Try to defend himself or justify it or anything. He just.
And so much today is that, you know, it's marketing, it's standing in front of a yacht going, here's my yacht, whether it is or not. And it's backwards. Again, it's be, do, and have. And what so many of the gurus have said, either because they are intentionally wrong, deliberately wrong, lying, or they don't know any better. One of the big things that I don't like about today is people say, if you don't know it, teach it. Mm. Because if you step ahead of the person behind you, you could teach them. Well, that's true unless you're headed toward a cliff.
Yes.
I mean, you know, if you don't know it, what are you teaching? You're teaching what you don't know. So you're teaching wrong. And so what are you doing?
You're setting people up to fail, not to succeed.
And you're teaching the wrong stuff. I can tell, having been in this business for 50 years, oftentimes where people are or who they learned from because of who they quote and whether they quote that person or if they misquote, saying, oh, that so-and-so said this when it wasn't that person at all. Somebody had said it years before. They attributed to who they are. In other words, people parrot the same mistake.
Yeah. What is it? There's nothing new under the sun, right?
And that's not a good or bad thing. But my point is that the gurus out there whose day you said, you know, may have come, tell you, you have to sacrifice. You have to work really hard. You have to give up everything. You have to, you know, they have these memes of, here's success and it looks good, but then you look at the back and there's arrows in the back and a hatchet in the back and all these things. I find that not very cool.
And
the reason for that is because if you love what you're doing, you're never going to work a day in your life. Those people who are driven to serve others because they love it, because they're passionate, because they're consumed by, you know, doing something, or if you love art or acting or music or poetry or whatever, you do it. And you do it, and then you go, gee, I haven't eaten, I haven't taken a bath, I haven't done anything in the last week. Oh, my gosh. It's not hard work, it's dedication.
It's obsession. It's
obsession and it's intensity. So the thing is, when they tell you you have to work hard, 10X it, you have to firewalk, you have to take massive action, they're wrong. When do you have to take massive action? Your car gets stuck in the mud, you have to do something extra to get out of the mud. But once you get it out of the mud, you don't have to keep taking it out of the mud. You don't have to keep doing matches.
It's a really good example.
Yeah, you know, so my point is this. They either have it wrong intentionally or they have it wrong inadvertently. Either way, they have it wrong. And here's the message. If you work really, really, really hard, you will get the things that you want. Cars, jets, trophy spouse, house, mansion, fame, celebrity, power, whatever. And then you'll be somebody of importance. So if you do it hard enough and get the things, those status symbols, that will demonstrate your worth. People go, I've made $4 billion. You should listen to me. And I go, well, who cares? You're good at making money. It doesn't mean you're a good person. Doesn't mean you're wise. Doesn't mean you're smart. Doesn't mean you're a good dad or a mom or sister or brother or whatever. Yeah. All it is that you are good at making money. Now, do I want to make money? Who should I follow? Well, I might follow somebody who's good at making money, but I want to make sure that they're a good person too, because I don't want to pick up their traits of not being a good person. I want to learn for the people who are loving, kind, gentle, generous, and compassionate, who also are good at making money. So who you listen to, who you learn from, who you pay attention to is so important on your path, because you can spend a lot of time learning from people who aren't there for you, they're there for them. And what subliminal messages do you pick up? I mean, that's a rhetorical question. I'm not trying to answer it. But you would say, I mean, in other words, you're surrounded by something that's not intrinsically good. Why would you spend your time there? So this is not to criticize any one person, but my point is...
No, it's healthy to acknowledge this and speak it out and speak that truth out, because I really believe that there are a lot of people out there that are being manipulated, who are being set up to fail and all that sort of thing. And this is something that I sort of stand for and stand against as well, you know, to speak that truth out. So thank you very much for voicing that. I appreciate you. I think it needs to be said.
I've spent decades saying it, you know, but I mean, and here's the thing. It's like casting pearl before swine. Those who are ready to hear it will hear. Those who have eyes to see will see, and those who have ears to hear will hear. And those who don't, when the student is ready, the master or the teacher or the lesson or the experience will appear. So in its own time, they will discover what they discover. But in the meantime, they will continue to do whatever they've done. And if you do what you always did,
you're always going to get what you always got.
Work out. Yeah, right. You know?
So. Yeah. And like as a student of the Bible for the last 10 years, and And, you know, there's paraphrases in that, and this very badly taught paraphrase, just to give that context. But there is passages in there that says that, you know, even people who read the Bible, who don't understand the power of God and love and all that, it's basically going to be interpreted as gobbledygook. You know, like it's going to be foreign. They're not going to get it. So it's you sort of got to go through the experience and get the wisdom and fall on your knees a few times, get a few scars, get a few battle wounds, whatever you want to call them, to go through that life, but keep leaning into it. And coming back to our whole conversation started off as embracing that, you know, learning how to pivot and adjust and fail forward fast, right?
Well, and yes, and to your point, even the Bible says, beware of those who are dressed as sheep, but are actually wolves, who are to deceive, you know, and to pervert or to lead astray, you know. I mean, so it you know, there's a recognition that just because somebody says something doesn't make them true. Mm. You have to have wisdom and discernment in order to be able to tell. And so for a lot of people, they don't know how to discern because they don't have any experience. So they, you know, we were talking about, you know, the today where there's so many false gurus or false promises or things. It's because we're now so far removed from people. Mm. In the old, you know, not that long ago, but it's to say 20 or 30 years ago when there was no internet and you had to do things by direct mail, you know, or you had to pick up a phone and call somebody, or you had to go knock on a door. There was a physical cost promoting a program. So I had to produce a brochure, whether that was copy a page of white paper with black print on it or a four-color brochure, whether it was one page or 20 pages, you know, and then mail or distribute that. That was a cost. That was an overhead. If I went into a hotel or a retreat center, I had to pay for the coffee and the, you know, the room and everything else. Well, with the internet, there's almost no money that needs to be spent to reach people with a message.
Mm. Yeah, everybody has a voice now. Yeah.
That may or not be accurate. So it's very hard to know, you know, if the person who's promising what they're promising and everybody's saying the same thing and it's all designed to be branded and to stand apart and to be noticed and to be different and to claim that market share because there's all this noise. I mean, and there's nothing wrong, by the way, there's nothing wrong with advertising. There's nothing wrong with marketing.
It all works. It's all mechanical stuff and it needs to be happening, but it's the heart behind it, right? It's the intent behind it.
That's exactly we're on the same page with that because it's, if you're just marketing to try and get money, and there's nothing wrong with money and there's nothing wrong with getting money, but if that's all and you're not into serving other people or connecting with other people, your very efforts sometimes will they can work for a while, but they don't typically work forever because if it's all just about marketing, there's got to be something that you're marketing that's worthwhile.
It's a substance to it, yeah, and it's going to be more than bigger than you and it's long-term. Totally agree. And very profound. So thank you very much for sharing those insights. I think that's very valuable for our audience to sort of take this away and you know, help them to set themselves up to success and understand that a lot of these core fundamentals, they're timeless. You know, it doesn't matter what tool, what campaign, what, you know, tactic or whatever it is that you're using, when you come from these core fundamentals that are timeless, then, you know, you use the right tool, the right campaign, then that's where the supercharge happens, right?
So for your audience, anyone there who wants to make money, if you decide, I want to make money, but I want to serve people, serving people, adding value, delivering goods, my promises, keeping my word, because your word is your bond, then I go for it, go for it. And yes, you'll have to market, you'll have to do all these things. But the point is, there still is, but sell the sizzle, not the steak. You've heard that, right? Well, okay, you make it sound really good and juicy, but you should still have a juicy, really good steak.
Yes.
If you're still selling
the good product at the steak, end of it, right?
Right, you got to have a good product at the end of it. The other thing is, you know, over-deliver, but under-promise, or under-promise.
Otherwise, you get the whole experience like the Mike Tyson fight that we just saw on Netflix.
It's sold.
Looking at it very, very well, but the product itself was a little bit to leave a sour taste in people's mouths.
Absolutely. So what the whole message boils down to this is be authentic, develop relationships, connect with people, build community. When I created the company's idea seminars and we trained all around the world and people would fly in all around the world. And what we did is we created back, this was before the internet, but it was It was called Idea Family, because everybody who came in, and my promise to each person, you know, like an NLP or whatever program I was doing, I'd go, I will, for as long as I'm alive, I will honor my promise to you to answer any question for what was covered in the program for as long as I'm alive. And and so how do we do that? We stay in touch. We stay in touch by direct mail or when email happened.
Love that. But I'm going to adopt that moving forward. That's brilliant.
I am still, I mean, 30, 40 years later, we're still together. Not all of
That's
us
brilliant.
Have died. Many have died. Some have disappeared, you know, have gone a different way. But there's still the people there. I had somebody reach out the other day and said, you know, it was your student in 1996, you know, and I just wanted to say, so, I mean, the point is, you know, and I would, you know, if I did three different programs, I would say, and they did all three programs, then the promise is good for all three programs. If they did one of the three, the promise is good for that one, because they wouldn't get the other two. You know, I can't answer.
They haven't got the foundation or the context.
Yeah. Right. But my point was, I want to be connected and I want to help somebody. I say this in regards to American football, that I consider myself like a quarterback, and I don't mean the star, because that's what people think of the quarterback as the star of the
thing. Yeah.
What I'm saying is that my job as quarterback is to pass the ball to you or to hand the ball off to you so that you can move the ball down the field to score.
Yeah.
And then as a team, we win.
Yeah. Let the main thing be the main thing. Yeah.
You're as important as I am. Because if I hang on to the ball and I get dropped where I am, and nothing's happened. So I have to get it to you. That's my job. To get it to you, get the information, get the strategies, the methods, the principles, the practices, the books, the programs, the training, or whatever it might be, to you so that you can score, and then you own your scoring. Mm. Somebody writes me a letter and says, Rex, what I learned from you allowed me to do this, or I did this. Is I go, great. If they say, Rex, you changed my life, I go, no, you're wrong. You changed your life using something that I told you or gave you or whatever.
Yeah.
But the importance is on that person, not on me. Yeah. You know,
it's like when a true partnership works hand in hand and really well, right? It's you take a responsibility for your actions and the other person take a responsibility for their actions. You're not responsible. Yeah. So you're responsible too. You're responsible to bring your party to that plate, not responsible for the other person, how they react or respond, but they're also responsible to, you know, playing. And it's not 50-50. It's you're bringing 100%, they're bringing 100%, and you got the 200%, you go and win together.
And on top of it, being a parent, right, you want your children to do better than you have, mostly. I mean, a good parent does. And so a good teacher or guru wants the student to surpass them. You don't want followers. Even Jesus said greater things you will do than I did.
Yes.
So, I mean, if he could say that, why couldn't we say that? Why couldn't we say, my goal is for you, if you have to stand on my shoulders, stand on my shoulders, but you should surpass me. You should leap at the starting gate, as I think Carnegie said, you pass me at the starting gate kind of thing. That's the goal of a good trainer or teacher. It's not to have millions of followers. It's to have millions of people who go on and who are better than you are, who can reach more people than you could, and who help build that community all around the world. And I say, you know, there's 8 billion people in the world. I want to help all 8 billion improve. People go, well, that's a lofty goal. I go, well, one person at a time. If you shared it to one person, another person shared it to one person.
One plus one equals affinity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's absolutely doable unless your attitude sucks, unless you go, no, I can't do it, and you have all the reasons why it can't be done. So we circle all the way back, you know.
It's beautiful. Yeah. I love that. I just read a book by Dave Ferguson. He planted a couple of churches in Chicago area, and the book's titled Hero Maker. It's discipleship 101 sort of stuff, why not? And I really resonate to that book at the moment. And the big key theme is I don't want to be the hero. I want to be a hero maker. You know,
yes.
I want to help make other heroes who are hero makers. And that's beautiful. So I just want to wrap up this conversation just quickly. I think we've shared a lot of awesome stories, and I think attraction marketing 101 principles is to become that person of influence, and to become that person of influence, we need to master storytelling. And there's amazing story, you know, amazing tools now in the AI space that help us to do this, but AI is not a tool to be replaced. You know, it's not to replace us, it's to be leveraged. You know, our mantra at the Laptop Lifestyle Dads community is AI plus our heart equals our superpower. So I love you to just sort of share your wisdom and insight into storytelling and how, you know, some frameworks that we could probably adopt to be able to run with that and leverage AI as a way to help us to master storytelling. Is that something you can speak into?
Sure. I mean, you know, there's ways to think about it. You know, Jesus spoke in parables, and, you know, are those parables true or not true? We don't know. I mean, you know, are they actual examples of people? But he wasn't telling stories about himself that weren't true. He wasn't going, well, when I was a kid, I did this and that and the other thing, at least not that we know of, right? So my point is, storytelling is a great avenue, and people want to hear stories because we have this thing called mirror neurons. It's like when you go to a movie and you watch a movie and you cry because the person is hurt or sad or dies, you know, that's not just because it's a story, it's because you actually have a receptor in your body that's connecting you to the experience where you can, in a normal person without damage, they can feel that compassion or that empathy or that sorrow or that joy that another person is feeling. And it even extends to physical abilities and talents, like being in the presence of somebody who's an expert golfer or martial artist. By being in their presence, you tend to go through it in your head and experience in your DNA as they do things. So, I mean, there's a lot of, when I started, you know, 50 years ago, there was so little research on all of this around the placebo and attitude. Now there's 40, 50, 60,000 studies that demonstrate what I'm talking about. So stories capture the heart, they capture the imagination. So if you can capture someone's imagination, it's great. I say be authentic, tell a true story. Yeah. Don't fabricate something that isn't true, because if you get found out or caught out, then you come off as, well, why would you tell?
Yeah, I love what Donald Miller from StoryBrand says in that space. You know, like it's to be vulnerable, but be raw, be real, you know, and be in that space, but share stories in a way that connects us through experience and that emotional context, right?
And I think, you know, somebody told me to say, I said something about my dogs today, and the guy said, hey, all the young people now love dogs. You know, don't look at landlords who are like the old landlords who didn't want dogs. So young people like dogs. I was like, oh, that's an interesting way of thinking about it. But the same is true about so many things. This notion of real and raw, it was a long time ago where you had to have, you know, four cameras and all the lights and be in a studio atmosphere and all the right mics. And then what happened is we found out that there was this thing called YouTube, and people were looking at little crappy videos on their phone instead of going to the 70mm, you know, screen theaters. They were like, oh no, let me get, you know, and they're scrolling, and they want that authentic, real, you know, unmade up, unlit, you know, non-perfected phoniness that comes in show business or in, you know, in our
it's relatable, right?
They want the real raw. They want the person who's down to earth. I think what's really happening is people, more today than ever, because of the internet, we really do want connections. We're being misled to think, you know, we can do it all through the computer and all through artificial intelligence or whatever. But it really comes back down to being, you know, being more human and having more human experience and human time together. And then whatever tools we use, understand that their purpose is to connect us.
Amen.
To heart.
Yeah. And it's like one of the things I love to say is the world is starving for connection. It's starving for love. So we have a responsibility to help meet people where they're at and give them that connection, give them what they need, you know, that love and that light in the world.
And authenticity. Somebody who's not afraid to speak the truth and who won't lie and who won't deceive and who won't con you, but says, here's what it is. And you might not like the truth or you might love the truth, but the person has integrity to speak that truth.
Yes.
Regardless of the outcome. That doesn't mean you have to go out and shock people and hurt people with the truth or anything like that. It's not bang them over the head with it. But when asked, be honest.
Yes.
You know, but it's truthful.
It's truth with love. I think truth can be delivered without love, and it can come across as that bashing across the head sort of scenario. But if you've got truth with love, that's where you make your stand for people and you're saying, okay, I respect you. I can see more in you, and this is what needs to happen. But here's a bit of kick-ass love, if you will, and I'm making this stand for you, but, you know, you're the one that's got to do the work, type sort of thing.
So if I may, and this might offend some people, and I'm not here to offend, but even the Bible, I love the Bible, so I use it. You know, a lot of people think the Bible is mostly about sin and hell and forgiveness and eternal life.
On the surface, it probably is, if you get underneath.
But it can be promoted that way by who's ever promoting. 4,000 promises in the Bible about goodness and life and love and abundance and prosperity and joy and happiness and family right here on earth, over 4,000 of them. And people tend to forget that. So when Jesus said the kingdom of heaven is within you, and seek first the kingdom of God and all his righteousness and all these other things will be added unto you, I think he meant it.
Yes.
In other words, whatever you want to, I'll give the disclaimer, however you want to interpret that for yourself. The point is, if your heart's in the right place and you're operating with integrity and you're loving and connecting with other people and your goal is to serve and to add value, and that is your promise and your commitment, your word is your bond, that rawness, that authenticity that will stand out and it will put you head and shoulders above everybody else because you're standing on promises that are timeless.
Sorry, I've just gotten... You've just spoken right to my heart, and I've just gotten very emotional. I reflect back just on my own life at the moment, especially this last 10-year period. I was an atheist 10 years ago, and now I'm a church planner. You know, I've gone from that old extreme to the other extreme. And when I reflect back about 10 years ago, when I got to the deepest, darkest area of my life and my story, it was all about the Jeff Ross show. It was all about me, myself, and I. I had a lot of success in that space. I had success, I lost it. I had success, I lost it. But it was really, it was about the Jeff Ross show. And I did, I was leading from that space of arrogance and ego and look at me, look at me. This time around, you know, moving into this space, it's a whole different energy. It's a whole different feel. It's a whole different purpose. It's a whole different intent. And basically, to sum it up, you know, the Easter time this year, my wife and I felt called to start an online church. And we called it Today's Discipleship Community. And essentially the DNA and the culture and the mission that we're on is to transform the one through Jesus' love. And we're basically just teaching people how to love themselves, how to love God, how to love their neighbors, and then go rinse and repeat, go make disciples of all nations, right? And that is the crux of it all. And it's just beautiful just to see what's happening in this space because it's not about us. This is something much, much bigger than us. And it's about the people that we can serve and how we can help people meet that love, that light, you know, that essentially that space, and help them to rinse and repeat and do the same thing out of love themselves. And it's beautiful to see what's happening.
Well, and I applaud you. And what is the greatest commandment? Love God with your whole heart and soul and mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. I mean, it couldn't be.
And in the Great Commission, is to teach people how to obey Jesus' commands and go make disciples of all nations.
Yeah, I mean, and be renewed by the transforming of your mind.
Right. So I think we can get into this and we can overcomplicate it and we can, you know, we can make it really messy and really hard. But when we bring it back down to the simple truth with love, like, and then we just go do the work, it's a lot of fun.
And so what I would say to those people who go, I don't want the religious stuff. I don't want that. Maybe for you, but not for me. I have a different way. I'm a different... Cut out all of the scripture, you know, and in terms of thinking where it comes from, but understand the principles that are being articulated and being shared are about communicating with other people, the sharing and loving and being present, being giving, you know, as Napoleon Hill said, go the extra mile. Well, if you could go the extra mile with another person or walk a mile in their shoes or hold them hand while you do that, you know, you're delivering value. And if that's your purpose in business, you know, your business can the sky is the limit because you will stand head and shoulders of all the other people who don't do that.
Yeah. Well, mate, I could talk to you all day on this topic.
Likewise.
What is the saying? I could talk to a deaf dog that's sitting at the corner of a round table, the mouthful of marbles underwater. So
I have never heard that statement, but it's one I want to keep from now on. I love that. That's really good. I could talk to a deaf dog on the corner.
So I talked to a deaf dog at the corner of a round table. With a mouthful of marbles underwater.
There you go. Well said.
So, well, I like to wrap up these podcasts. I did warn you with a bit of a clean, simple dad joke. Being known as the king of dad jokes, got three amazing boys. They're getting to that age now where they're starting to go, oh, dad. And yeah, that impact. But hey, what do you call a cow with no legs?
A cow with no legs?
Right. Ground beef.
Ooh.
And what do you call a cow with two legs?
Right.
Lean beef.
Jeez, oh jeez.
I grew up on cattle ranch.
So where you get a, you know where you get a dragon milk?
No, where do you get a dragon milk?
From a cow with very short legs.
Love it. I'll have to use that one. Well, Rex, it's been an absolute pleasure, mate. Thank you very much for this time. I really will cherish this moving forward. For our listeners who they love to plug in, get your book, you know, connect with you, how can they do that?
Well, they can get my book from Amazon, or they look, it says rexsykes.com book. And if they go there, there's instructions, which will send them to Amazon to get the book. But when they come back, they'll get a bonus video online training that's valued at $497 on mastery, how to master your thoughts, your feelings, your words, your actions, and behaviors to get different kinds of results and to master any talent or skill you'd like to do. So that's my gift to people who would get the book. They can reach me there. I've got a great program right now called the, you know, Get Your Best Life Using Einstein and Tesla's Genius. If you go to my website, you look at the different offerings, and if you choose to dive right in, because I'm there and I love helping people. So
I love that. And I know what I'm going to be doing as soon as I get off this call is I'm going to go get your book, and I'm going to just become a student of Rex, because I actually love everything that you have to represent. I totally resonate, totally connect, and I thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate you. So for our listeners, I always like to think, you know, a part of this whole purpose of this podcast is to empower and equip people and help them to live their best version of their lives. And, you know, we can be either knowledge on ice or we can be ignorance on fire. And so I love to leave people with a bit of a takeaway action step that they go and do straight away. What do you feel would be that one action step to help them to get in the game and actually go take action?
The best thing that a person could do to stop worrying about all the other stuff around them and focus on developing themselves, finding their true self, release and let go of whatever holds you back, and develop your mindset so that anything that you want to be able to do, you decide that you can do. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, I want to be able to do this. How about starting to say, I'm choosing to do this, or I'm manifesting this, as opposed to, I want money, I'm manifesting money, I want a new career, I'm manifesting a new career, I want a car, I'm manifesting a car. You know, make it something that is deliberate that you can do, because after all, when it comes down to it, you're either the cause of the goodness in your life or you're not. So be the cause.
Yeah, we can have our results or we can have our excuses.
Well, I liken it like this. I go, there's dog crap and diamonds you have to choose. And a lot of people choose dog crap. The other side—
That's a better way of putting it. I like that.
But the other side to it is people stand on a dock and on a boat. And they have 1 foot on the dock and 1 foot on the boat, and they go nowhere. In order to go somewhere, you have to get both feet into the boat and then go to the destination.
Good to go all in, yeah.
Here's the good and bad news. Now you're in the boat moving toward your destination. You may not make it to your destination. You could die. The world could end. Any number of things could happen. So how you make it to the destination is the most important thing.
That's pretty profound. I think we need to come back for a round two on this and actually go deeper in this conversation, because straight away, as you mentioned that, I reflect on Paul in the Bible and, you know, the amount of shipwrecks that he had to go through to get to his destination, right?
Right. Yep. So it's travel well. So I say, if you have a problem with dog crap or diamonds, if you think of something's a problem, it's a problem. If you think of something as a blessing, it's a blessing. So celebrate everything.
It's a choice. Love it. Well, Rex, thank you very much for your time, mate. I really do appreciate you. And legends, what a way to end the year and start fresh. You know, this conversation with Rex Sykes is exactly the kind of inspiration that we all need heading into 2025. The tools and strategies that Rex has shared aren't just for listening. They're for you to take action. And I highly encourage you to go get his book and then plug into that free session that he offers at the end of that. Like, absolute amazing time. Let's go. So take one idea from this from yourself and don't sit on that. Let's go and apply it. Let's go and start messy. Let's go and learn through the experience and let's go do the thing that will require us to go get the result right now. So now's the perfect time to do it. Let this be the most transformative year that you've had. And hopefully this podcast, this episode is being just a chapter in your book to help you point you in the right direction. As always, hey, if you found value from this episode, make sure you share it with someone who needs it and make sure you go subscribe so you don't miss out on future episodes. We're found on Spotify, Apple Podcast, YouTube, and we're also partnered up with the Los Angeles Tribune Podcast Network. So massive thank you to you, Rex. Really appreciate you for helping to make this episode happen. Here's to starting 2025 with clarity, purpose, and impact. I see you on the new year with the Laptop Lifestyle Dad Show. And until then, stay caffeinated, stay legendary, and keep bouncing towards your dreams. Thanks, Rex.